This car is the most honest car you ever see.
It's been a dream ever since I've had it.
The first time I heard that engine screaming, I thought, I gotta have one of those.
For me, the cars have personality.
What's great about a BMW Classic is the community that surrounds it.
When you listen to that, that's why we're here.
Welcome to Classic Heart, the BMW Group Classic Podcast. This is JP and our guest today is Sean Myers from Precision Sport Industry. And what's behind PSI, and don't start Googling PSI because it will give you a different thing. So just focus on Sport Precision Industry if you want to learn more about this. But you don't need to because we have the man behind that company with us and of course, he has a big love for BMWs. And with a big, big open heart, we welcome Sean Myers. Hello, Sean. How are you doing?
I'm great. I'm excited to be here and to speak with you and talk about my life, basically.
And I think your life is very closely related to three letters. The letters BM and W.
Yes, I would say so.
I just mentioned in the beginning a little bit your company, and I think it's just fair to just give the background how your love for cars end up in this company. So tell us a bit more about Precision Sport Industries, please.
Yeah, so my dad used to collect cars and build street rods. So ever since I was born, I've been around cars, European cars. My dad had Porsches and BMWs growing up. So when I turned 16, I was lucky enough to get an E36 M3, and that was always a car that I saw growing up around my area and loved it. So I ended up picking that up and basically had a hobby garage where I would modify it and work on it. And people that knew me would come by and say, hey, can you work on my 325 or can you work on my car? And it slowly turned into PSI and Precision Sport, what it is today. It's now been over 16 years doing this.
Wow. Was it in the US, obviously, but whereabouts in the US?
We're in Orlando, Florida, which is, central Florida. It's known, obviously, for Disney and everything.
Obviously.
But I'm from here. We have two locations in here that are about 45 minutes apart. So,
I mean, growing up next to or very close to Disneyland seems as a youngster very tempting, I would say. How many times have you got to visit Disneyland?
I would say when I was a kid, we used to go a lot. Now that I have small kids, I have a 2- and a 4-year-old, we tend to go a lot more. And it's about a 30-minute drive and, but it's still crazy expensive and it's still crazy busy.
Yeah, it is.
So, it's cool. And what ends up happening is a lot of people that come to see me or come to leave us with a car, they turn it into a vacation. So yeah. If we're doing a, a quick job on the car, they'll come for a week and we'll go ahead and do that for them. They'll stay here, go to Disney. Or if it's a long-term project, they might come pick up their car that we've worked on for a really long time and take their family to Disney. So it kind of works in that way, kind of cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good coexistence, I would say.
Yeah.
I have to say, I've never been to Orlando and never been to Florida, obviously.
You need to come. You should come for Rolex 24.
Yes.
It's a great race.
Absolutely. For those, a bit of background. So that's the Daytona Beach one, right?
Correct.
Yes. So, and that's really something. The track very close to the seaside. I think this is a must to go there for once in a life, at least.
It is. I've been going to Rolex 24 since I was about 7, 8 years old. Used to go and take the motorhome with my family. We camp out because it's a 24-hour race.
Yes.
And I remember when the E36s and the E46 GTRs raced.
Yeah.
At the race, that was the only thing I would care about was seeing those cars. And all the way up till now where, this year we saw the LMDH compete with the M4 GT3. So
mega.
Yeah, and sports car racing for me is amazing because it's cars from the road that are racing on the track, and they look as much as, the GT3, of course, the most, but they look as close to the factory cars as possible. I think nowadays they're very much different.
Absolutely.
But for people that are not into this, that I take to that race, that's really what they connect with, is seeing those cars. Oh, I see those on the road and now they're out here racing. So yeah. It's a cool connection for people that aren't into cars and cars are not their life, like me and you. It's really a cool tie-in for that. So I like doing that.
And Sean, was racing always something also in your mind, starting in, I don't want to say active race career, but going into racing?
Yes. I mean, it's always been a part of what I've always been to. Rolex 24 was one that I grew up with, but also my mom is from Indianapolis. So we used to go to the Indy 500 every year. And I also went to Daytona 500 just as a thing to do with my dad. But yeah, it was always something I wanted to do. And I do it a little bit. I used to do a lot more track days with my E30 M3 and my my F82. I don't do much anymore. We support a lot of guys that take their cars out. We don't do much racing anymore. Just I'm more here building cars and working.
I mean, that's amazing. Having a mother from Indianapolis and growing up next to Daytona Beach. I mean, that's a dream in so many ways. So how would you describe the difference between the Indy 500, because different classes and cars, but I'm speaking more about the atmosphere. What's the beauty of each of it?
It's just, for me, I mean, when I was a kid, it was just, obviously it's much different because the Indy is 2 to 3 hours, super high speed around the ring of Indianapolis. But when we would go the week. So we would go to the parade and we would go to the museum and we would see the history of Indianapolis and what that means for Indiana and for the US. But differences wise for me, and what I just realized is what goes into it. The rules kind of dictate the shape of the cars and the really the rules of the, you know, of the way they look, and the fact that they're racing in one class for one championship, while sports car is many classes at the same time, which is, it makes sports car racing even more crazy once you say it that way. So
what I like is the way of, as you said, people come with their camper vans, they do their barbecues before the race, during the race, and also have the social program, parades, autograph sessions, all these kind of things, little marketplaces. Mm-hmm. I've only been to the historic Le Mans 24 Hours and the contemporary one. And I just can say it's so magic still, even though it's really like a change of cars and some of the cars, as you mentioned, I don't really like because they have nothing to do with the road cars anymore. And I really like it if you see like a Porsche or a BMW or even a Chevrolet driving in just with all the modifications you need by the FIA. I mean, that's so cool. The atmosphere is really, really magical in these long distance races. And for me, that's the crown of all racing, more than Formula One, even more than rally. And I'm a big rally fan.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I was lucky enough to go to Le Mans in 2005, which to me was an amazing era to see the cars because they were still, even though they were built from the ground up, they still looked like the street. Very much so.
Yes.
And when I went to Le Mans, even though I had been to obviously the other big 24-hour race, which is Rolex, Le Mans was just way more magical, to use your term. And it was just, there's like a feeling there at the track during the race that you can't replicate anywhere else. And it, I think it's a combination of the fans, the place, and everything.
I was lucky to camp in the inner circle in a camper van. So we had the sound of the cars really like 24 hours. And I had an espresso, a coffee, every hour with someone who has a connection to the Le Mans race, with Jackie X or with his daughter Vanina. And we called it 24 coffees in Le Mans. So I stayed from the beginning of the race. In the first hour, I had coffee with Schwitzel Stuck. And the second hour with Jochen Maas, so all the old legends, all the old guards of racing. So it was really, really cool.
Amazing.
But I would like to jump back a little bit to the early years of Sean, growing up in Florida, saying that your father was like a big fan of German cars, Porsches, BMWs. And you also said that he started also working on them himself, right?
He didn't really work on many cars, but he had so many that he would tinker a little bit. But he had buddies of his with other street rods. Like these are 34 you know, Ford 34 coupes and 32 highboy roadsters. Those are a couple of cars he had. And they would, you know, have a club meet, which is like Cars and Coffee is now.
Yes.
But they would do it at a clubhouse kind of a deal.
Yeah.
And we would go to all the street rod shows in Louisville and in Atlanta, and we would drive the cars and use the cars.
Yeah.
The cool thing about automotive and cars for me is that it's such an individual thing for people. Some people have their enjoyment of their Bugatti Veyron in their garage and never drive it. And that's their enjoyment. They clean it, they look at it. That's what they get from it. Other people want to drive their Veyron. Very few, I would say. Yeah. But there has to be a couple owners out there that drive their car, maybe on a daily basis, that get that enjoyment from it. And there's really nothing else to me like that in the world, that you can have that choice of use and that power to do what you want with it.
You said something very, very right, because what makes cars a living object is if they're seen on the road. And especially with hypercars like the Veyron and others, you see so rarely on the roads that they only exist in some special car meets, and they don't have the same appeal. I mean, I like all hyper and supercars, but I have to say that, yeah, it's actually, we should encourage everyone to go out and drive their cars, because that would help. I mean, how cool would it be to see the 3.0 CSL limited edition they just introduced recently? How cool would that be to see this on the road? I saw it in the collections, yes. Very cool car, but I think it would do so much for the whole love for car and for the whole enthusiasm if we all decide to drive cars, if we have special ones, and not necessarily expensive. We don't speak about the money and the cost of the car. I only speak about rare things, beautiful things, things you worked on, things PSI worked on, all these special things. We need to have them on the roads to keep these. We don't want to see the iPhones on wheels. That's the point.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I think there's a difference also between when you go to Pebble Beach or you go to Goodwood and you see cars that are been restored and that are original. And to me, original is not the real word to use. It's authenticity for me is what's important.
Yeah.
So for me, I mean, with my personal cars and a lot of the stuff where customers, all the cars that customers bring me that ask me my opinion, I will say to them, I want to do it authentic. I want to do modifications that are period correct, you know, to use that term.
Yeah.
And also, you know, advise what my thoughts is, because there's been cars that I've built for other customers and for myself, quite frankly, that I don't use because they're too nice and I was stressed out. So
yeah.
I've basically become a person that really wants to have a very nice driver, a quality car. And to the general public that would see me with the car would be like, oh, that's an amazing condition car. Well, it is from 10 feet, but yeah. It's a car that has been used and been serviced and been, you know, resurviced and whatever. And that's how my Bavaria is. That's how, you know, my E28 is, because to me, the enjoyment is the use of it, but also me being able to drive it and not worry about in the restaurant with my wife if someone is banging my car or there's a rainstorm or something else. And to me, that I've been able to enjoy my cars more, because I used to, you know, get a new car and run a car cover when I would go and do normal things. I would literally go to the grocery store, park in the furthest spot in the corner and run a car cover. And that you know, calmed me down with my OCD. Yeah. But as I backed away from that, I've learned that I get more enjoyment. You know, my car's still clean. I still park it in the last spot.
Yeah.
But I've learned, and that's what I try to pass on to some people that are just getting into finding the car that they wanted. And maybe I tend to caution people to not over restore something if we're doing the paint. And little super attention to detail things that to me will give them the enjoyment that they're looking for. Because again, the other thing too is cars are for fun.
100%.
This is for fun. And that's what I want people to get from them over and above. I mean, obviously, this is my business and we repair a lot of stuff and do a lot of servicing. But ultimately, the goal is with everything with the automotive is fun. So
I would be interested. How would you see that with your kids? Are they allowed to jump in any car, play around the car, or are you not there yet?
Well, they're still young. I mean, I take my son over to my warehouse and I let him jump in and out. But I am also trying to pass on the hands behind your back kind of rule at a car show and some of that, because I've seen the other spectrum of the opposite. So I'm kind of trying to teach them the right way. But I ultimately will, once my son understands, even with his Hot Wheels, and he has so many, hundreds of Hot Wheels, because my dad also, he spends a lot of time with my dad, and my dad literally quizzes him holding the car of what the make is and what the model is. And he knows all of them. He'll be driving with me and say, oh, look at that BMW. And he'll see it before I see it, because I'm trying to drive.
Yeah.
And he'll say, oh, look at that 3 Series, or look at that 2002. And it's from those Hot Wheels. But I try to even teach him to be gentle with the Hot Wheels and not bang them. And so he's learning.
We had a very strict rule at home. So I'm the second born. And of course, I had more freedom because my brother is 10 years older than I am. But it was really, really clear that if I break something, there's no replacement. So I learned from the beginning to be very careful with my matchboxes, with my later with Revel and all these other Burago models. And I played a lot with this stuff. I mean, the stories we create when we were like 5 to 6, 7, 8 years old with friends coming over for play dates. The stories are amazing, but then I put them everything like in order way. By the way, I have to be honest, I only did it with the cars. With Lego and all this other stuff, it was a mess. But you learn to appreciate and respect the object as well. Don't overdo it, but just, I mean, someone worked hard for it to make it possible that you have it. And speaking about appreciation, I mean, I see this old massive BMW logo hanging on the wall behind you. What made you such a big BMW fan? Why this brand?
Well, I mean, it was seeing those E36s first in my area. There was a Estoril blue E36 coupe that I would see every day that I loved. I loved the shape. I loved the color. I knew it was a sports car at the time. And this was when the car was new. This was in 97, 98. Then when I got my E36, mine was a sedan. It was a used car that my dad and I found. I started going to the CCA meets to just try to be involved. Then I saw an E30 M3.
We have to say what the CCA meetings are, just for the record.
Sure. So that's the BMW CCA. That's the Car Club of America. We have different chapters here in the U.S. based upon region. And there's a Southeast, there's a Florida chapter. And back in the day, it was something that most people went to when they were interested in BMW. Now we have the internet and groups, and a lot of that has changed. But back in the day, if you wanted to meet up with other BMW owners, it was at BMW CCA, an event. So I believe it was at a restaurant. But there was a guy there that we met that had a henna red E30 M3. And I had only seen E30 M3s in the Rondel, which is the BMW CCA magazine, back in the day. And I would see them for sale, and I was like, oh, that's the M3 that came before the E36. And I didn't really notice it anymore. But when I finally saw one in person with the box flares, and in person in henna, which to me is the best color for that car.
Agreed.
I was obsessed with that. I was totally obsessed. So my dad and I actually started looking for them. And back then, in 98, 99, no one really wanted those cars. They were at the bottom of the ladder, so to speak. And we ended up picking one up for about, I think we paid $11,000 for it. And the guy that we bought it from, he was a racer, and he had just purchased a car that TC Klein built, an E30 M3. He had bought it from TC Klein, and this was his old car. So he had done track days with it, but it wasn't perfect. But it wasn't bad, and we picked it up, and that was it. From then on, I was totally obsessed with BMW.
It's a good start. I mean, Heather, that just reminds me, also, one of our guests before you is Shan Aylik from Istanbul, and he has exactly the similar car. His car is called Henna as a nickname, and when I visited him, he was like over the moon with this car. So you have something in common, because if I remember correctly, this was his first BMW as well. So, I mean, That's nice. But then at that time, were you able to work on that BMW yourself, or is it too early for that?
It was too early. I had a guy, a shop locally here called the Bimmer Place. This guy, Graham from the UK. Yeah. And he had a workshop just like I have now. And he would let me come over there and he would teach me different things. And that's how I learned to really work on cars and get into the love of actually upgrading them and seeing the different things that can be done. You know, there really wasn't a really specific BMW workshop at that time. He was pretty much the only one. And the day I pulled up there, I'll never forget, there was a 2002 round taillight car. I think it was a 71. There was an E34 that he was building with a Hartge motor, V12, the 5.7 liter, I believe, that they made. They only made a few of those engines for the 850 Hartge model.
I didn't know that.
And that was when I first saw that you could do an engine swap that's crazy like that. That this was resto modding and this was really street rodding that time. But that's when I sort of realized that you could do this type of stuff with these cars and there were people that wanted to do it.
So we can say that the British guy, German cars, had influence in you becoming a specialist in resto modding, in motor upgrades, in body shaping, all these kind of things. So when did you make the decision, okay, this is what I would like to do for a living?
You know, that was when I met Graham, who is from the Bremer place. That's the English guy. He was helping me work on my E36.
Yeah.
And then as time went on, I had got my E30. And then I met friends of mine at car meets and at CCA meets. And then we had kind of a hobby garage that was PSI. And it was me and a couple of my buddies. They had an E46 M3. They had an E36 M3. And we would tinker with the cars and we would modify them, suspension and wheels. And then people would see us at the meets and be like, oh, those wheels look good. Where'd you get them? What suspension do you have? And then it slowly became a business. And in 2008, we decided we should start doing this for work.
Yeah. Nice.
And so I got together with those other guys who were all into BMW and we started the shop. And in 2009, Graham had actually went back to England. Mm-hmm. One day I'm like, I'm going to go see Graham's old shop. And it was for rent. And I was like, here we go.
Yes, and done.
We were there. We were there for 10 years. We were there from 2009 to 2019. And that was a 3,500 square foot place. And we just outgrew it. We were doing so much work aftermarket. And then we started getting into really doing a lot of repair and service. And it slowly snowballed into more and more and more and more. And then in 2019, we moved to another location in Orlando, which is 13,000 square feet.
Oh, wow.
And then the funny thing is 3 months ago, the shop, Graham's old shop, my old shop, became available again. And I was able to partner up with a tuner that I work with. And we were able to open Winter Park again, which is the same place, but two locations. And it, like I mentioned before, it's about 45 minutes apart, these two stores. But we're able to offer more for the community, have two locations. And yeah, it just keeps growing.
So yeah. It's fair to say you turned your hobby into your profession.
I do listen to the podcast. And, you know, Brian from Period Correct, him and I are not super close, but we used to run into each other in California when I would go to some of the events there.
Yeah.
And we've spoken. And he always says, well, I never have to work a day because this is I do what I love. And this is the same. It's really the same situation. And to be able to do this business, in my opinion, with what difficulties you have with, you know, the complexity of fixing cars and the complexity of doing a service business, meaning, you know, people are bringing us cars, we're working with customers to fix them, is a difficult business. And I think anyone that does what I do would 100% agree. You have to have that love for this stuff to do it, to wanna do it. And
go the extra mile.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's why we started the YouTube page, because so many people would say to me, man, they would come and drop a car off.
Yeah.
And I give them the tour of the place and they see the kind of stuff I have here. And then they see the cars that we're working on.
Yes.
And they always say, I never knew you guys did this. So that's one of the reasons I wanted to start the YouTube stuff, to share what we're doing and to educate people. So when they bring me something, they kind of already know what we're going to do. They kind of already know what they want. And especially with the classics.
That's fair. What's the name of the YouTube channel?
It's Precision Sport. Precision Sport Industries, it's the same for the shop.
And how many people are working for PSE now in both locations?
We have about just about 10 people total that are here.
That's a very cool small team, but you achieve a lot with them.
We do. Yeah, we do a lot. The guys are amazing. And the guys, the technicians, the guys that are here in the shop are enthusiasts themselves. They all own their own BMW. They always work on their cars on the weekends. They are just as me. This is their life.
I mean, that's true enthusiasm. And you know what, Sean? I'm very enthusiastic about a new element in our podcast. It's called Pit Stop. So a little game.
Okay.
I will ask you a series of choice questions, means either or. Please answer as quickly as possible, just like in a pit stop where you just function.
Okay.
So let's start. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. 3, 2, 1. Here we go. E30 M3 or E36 M3?
E36.
Petrol or electric?
Petrol.
Petrol or diesel?
Petrol.
Electric or no car?
Electric.
Driving alone or driving with passengers?
Alone.
Road trip or racetrack?
Road trip.
Stick shift or automatic?
Stick shift.
Stick shift or pedals?
Stick shift.
Engine in the front or in the back?
Front.
Engine in the front or in the middle?
Front.
Italian design or North American design?
Italian design.
Italian design or German design?
Italian design.
Interstate or highway?
Interstate.
Interstate or Autobahn?
Autobahn.
Highway 30A or Highway 101?
101.
Alpina white or Bahama yellow?
Alpina.
That's it. Very good. I love your answers. E30 M3 or E36 M3? You said E36. Why?
Because of the size for me.
Yeah.
The size of it, the balance of the chassis, and just everything that's available for the E36. We just, you know, here we've built so many different iterations with S54 or with a modified S52. It's just an all-around great size car, and I think it's one of the best M3s made.
The engine is also magical, and people don't understand that at this point somehow.
They don't.
It's an upcoming car, I think. It's a car you should watch. So, because if you've driven one, I agree, it's one of the best drive in an M3.
It is.
100%. And what I also find very interesting, you said driving alone or driving with passengers. It was really clear you said driving alone. What does driving mean to you?
I mean, for me, driving is my relaxation point. The feeling that I have when I'm driving and listening to my music by myself on a drive is the best feeling.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a good time for me to, you know, drive my 2002 a good amount of time. Or I also, my daily driving, which will surprise a lot of people, my daily driver right now is an iX.
Really? Well, that explains the electric answer.
It does. The iX, one of the reasons I got it was because I always want to have the newest car from BMW.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a research time for the shop, whether it's an iX or I also have a G87 M2. And before that, I had a G80 M3. Mm-hmm. Those are the new cars. Those are the new platforms. And especially with the iX being the preview into the newest technology or format of the interiors and of the technology, I always want to know what that is and part of my learning experience. But when I drove, the dealership gave me an iX to test drive. They said, hey, do you want to take a car? And I said, I'll do it. Sure. And I was blown away with the car. I was blown away with the performance. I was blown away with how quiet it was. And I loved the interior.
Yes, it looks very futuristic.
It does. And my particular one is blue interior with the Alcantara, mm-hmm, blue dash. That's a white car. I had a customer here and he asked me, what's your current daily? That's a question I always get asked. And I said, it's right there. It's the iX. I said, let me show you. And I showed him it, the interior and how quiet it was. I showed him the Bowers & Wilkins sound system in it. And he was blown away with the car. I mean, literally, he was speechless with the car.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people here, at least in the States, write off a lot of the electric cars.
Yes.
Especially from legacy manufacturers like BMW. They're just like, well, they have to make it. So it's just an X3 or whatever with the electric motor. And that car specifically, as I know you are aware, is a ground up electric.
Complete.
And it, every issue that I've ever had, again, this is my personal opinion, of a Tesla, of a quality thing or something I didn't like, was addressed with this iX.
Yes. Well said.
In every way. And so the funny thing is, too, is one of my favorite things to do is drive my iX to my warehouse and then get out one of my carbureted cars, like my O2 or my Bavaria, and because it's such a different car, but I enjoy each one. I enjoy the iX and I enjoy the O2. Obviously, they're much different, and obviously, my enjoyment level is a little bit different with them. But in order to appreciate those cars more, driving the iX daily, it helps. And in order to appreciate the iX more, driving those helps.
Yeah. When I ask you about the highways, so I would like, for those who are not familiar, so Highway 30A is a scenic highway in Florida, and Highway 101 is a scenic highway in California. And I think you feel it now where my question is going. What is the difference, or what are the differences between the BMW scene in Florida and California, if there are any?
The scene in California, for me, has always had a more inclusive sort of approach.
Yeah.
The California SoCal scene, and Brian actually said it very well in his podcast with you.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it. And what he said was, is that the SoCal scene is inclusive with everyone. So when you go to a Cars and Coffee or you go to a Pit Stop at Period Correct, it is Defender 90 group there with their Defenders. It's the Porsche guys with their Porsches. It's the classic BMW guys. It's the G80 guys.
Yes.
It's the Ferrari guys. It's the Mustang guys. It's everything. And everyone is enjoying the cars in general. But they also appreciate what everyone else loves. And everyone else loves the same thing. They love their car. And that really shows there. I've lived in Florida my whole life. Florida and California are very similar because we have year-round good weather for cars. So cars here are not seasonal. They're all year-round.
Yeah.
But I lived in California on and off for a few years, and I lived in Irvine, and I had my E28 out there and my E12, and I got to drive those every day with the AC turned off, with the windows down, because it was in the 70s. Here in Orlando, I have to blast the AC because it's very hot and very humid. So I'd say the weather is much different. But I think that the dedication and the passion is the same in both states. It's just a little bit different in how much culture that I think California has had from day one with everything car related.
So it's very good to know that the good word has been spread. Like the virus of BMW had been spread. I would like to ask you this. If you had the freedom to design a completely new BMW, so whatever it is, there's no obligations in terms of technical things, engineering things, marketing things, whatever it is, what would it look like and what are your ingredients?
I'll say it in this way. Aston Martin makes a continuation of their 60s DB4s. I would, if it was up to me, I would want to do the same with the CSLs.
Okay.
The lightweight CSLs. And probably maybe a 2002 special model or something, a continuation of those vehicles with continued VIN numbers in the same way, with the original people that did it, with the original tools that did it. And to me, that would be like the ultimate.
So I think this comes also back to the point where you said what authenticity means to you. Mm-hmm. I think it goes into the same line. So would it rather be the 2002 or the 3.0 CSL?
The CSL.
Yeah.
They made a 2002 homage, which I'm sure you have in your mind like I do now.
Yes.
They kind of did it with the new CSL, but I was hoping it would be exactly the yellow prototype.
Yes.
That they came with. That's yeah. what I was hoping to see. I really do like the new 3.0 CSL, but in my mind, that concept captured everything.
Yeah, it did. Absolutely. For me, it's also like the Neue Klasse as well. Because if you look at the back of the Neue Klasse, the concept study, or the concept, it reminds me of the 70s looks on Hamburg roads with the BMW 3 Series running around, and this is exactly the same shape of the the back of the car. I really like that. So that's a lot of new projects for you, or perhaps more for the BMW group. But what are your plans this year? Where can people meet you outside of your workshop?
So I think there'll be a couple opportunities maybe for you. I plan to go to Pebble Beach this year.
Yes.
I will be there for sure. I have a rumor that there's going to be a special car there that BMW is going to release. I probably shouldn't mention it in the podcast.
Of course you can. It's rumors.
It's a rumor, M5 Touring.
Rumor.
I like to go to the Legends of the Autobahn there. The show, which is a CCA show,
yes,
with all my buddies show. From San Jose that are there with the NKs and with the 700s and with the cars that I don't really get to see that much because the classic scene in California is huge, especially for Pebble Beach. To me, being around this stuff, I'm around it every day, but to go to those events and my off time is important because it's like I said about having the newest model BMW.
Yeah.
Also going to Pebble Beach and getting to see these releases and be a part of it is part of the culture, but it's also part of what I think I need to be doing as a continuous education or continuous improvement, so to speak.
Agreed.
So I'll be there, but I'm also probably going to come over to Munich. I'm still finalizing the plans in June. And I wanted to come see Classic.
That sounds like a very good plan because a visit to BMW Classic is always, always cool. I just can say that and repeat myself. I mean, I said it many times in this podcast. But please, so everyone who tunes in, if you are in Munich and you have the time, stop by at BMW Classic. There's a nice cafe. They have tons of events going on there, like Wheels and Vice Versa and others. So a visit is always good. And I have to say, thank you, Sean, for being our guest at Classic Heart tonight.
Well, thank you very much, JP. Thank you to everyone putting this on, all the people in the background, Alex and Frederic and Robin. They've been great to deal with. And this is a great thing, I think, for BMW, I might say. And it was a joy to be here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And this means also that first time ever, thank you, Sean, because I don't need to say the thank yous, which I, of course, do without any doubt, to the great team that's making this podcast possible. And I would like also to thank everyone who did follow our call to action and send us ideas of guests. We were overwhelmed by the number of guests you proposed. So please be patient with us. We're looking into it, how we make that possible. This podcast is for you. So we love if you bring up people from the community. And if you like what you just heard or listened to, please give us a follow. Subscribe button is always a big help. You will never miss out one of our episodes. And as we said, we are here for you. Enjoyed the podcast. And Sean, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.